Welcome to the Defense and Aerospace Report's monthly technology report sponsored by General Motors Defense. I'm your host, Vago Maradian, here in Concord, North Carolina, just outside Charlotte, at the new General Motors Defense facility where the infantry squad vehicle is under production. Later in the program, what one small company with a good idea is learning as it tries to break into the defense business. But first, joining us now is Jeff Ryder, the Vice President for Strategy at General Motors Defense. Before we get started, our daily podcast is sponsored by Bell. Our global coverage is sponsored by Leonardo DRS. Northrop Grumman sponsors our weekly cyber report and our cyber coverage overall. Fincantieri Marinette Marine sponsors our naval coverage. General Atomics Aeronautical Systems sponsors our coverage of strategy. And Rafael Advanced Defense Systems sponsors our coverage of air and missile defense. We are here in North Carolina for the opening of the General Motors Defense plant here that will be building the infantry squad vehicle, an absolutely blazing program. Jeff, congratulations. A lot of U.S. Army leaders, the North Carolina congressional delegation was here as well. As well as U.S. Army leaders on this facility to be building four vehicles a week. You guys set this factory up in 90 days from bare ground, 120 days after the contract was awarded. You guys have already delivered the first vehicles. Congratulations.
Thanks very much, Vago. It's a great day for us. This is the culmination of a lot of hard work on our end, as well as with our Army customers. So great for you and all of our guests to be here today.
Obviously, you guys are sponsoring our technology report. This is the first of that monthly cycle, and we're very, very happy to have you guys aboard. And I think that people don't have as fulsome an understanding of the engineering horsepower that General Motors brings to the table, right? I mean, they have a tendency of thinking of it as an automotive company. But you guys have 40,000 engineers that are just doing engineering things from research to applied. Talk to us a little bit about that technology portfolio, because you guys also are rebranding yourselves as actually a technology company that happens to use technology for mobility. It's not even a car company. You guys developed, for example, the OnStar architecture at the time. You guys owned Hughes. You guys have cyber that's actually pretty acknowledged in the field as being pretty good. And that doesn't even get to autonomy, batteries, and the propulsion and power technology you guys work. What are the suite of technologies that you guys have been investing tens of billions of dollars in that you think is going to be most applicable to the defense market?
Sure. So I think there are different ways to look at GM. I mean, we're certainly a vehicle company, but I think when you look at mobility and where it's going, it's very much a technology play right now. And if you look at the investments and the transformation that General Motors is going through, you'd see that so much of the emphasis right now is on the technology investments for the vision of the company, which I'll talk about in a minute, but the transformation internally of the company to become this sort of 21st century mobility model. What that is for GM is a 0-0-0 future. And what that really means in reality is electric, connected, and autonomous vehicles. That portfolio really underpins everything that we do at General Motors. So if you think of the investments we've made in electric vehicles, over the next 5 years, we will have invested $27 billion in electric vehicle technology alone. That's for 30 new products released globally. And then there's the investments in hands-free driving, automated driving, autonomous technology, and connected vehicles. We have the largest connected vehicle fleet in the world. I believe we have 22 million connected vehicles. We do 150,000 calls, our call volume per month with OnStar. So we have a real-time operation for connected vehicles and servicing customers in that. And if you look at the sort of the breakdown of the stock price and how the company is valued, it's very much about the play towards electrification. So the company has committed to this vision for an electric, connected, and autonomous future, and that's really the underpinning for GM Defense. We are certainly moving out on the technology piece as it pertains to vehicle systems. If you look at the infantry squad vehicle, that's a diesel-powered vehicle. But the next steps for electrification, what we do with lithium-ion batteries through our Ultium battery technology and that suite of capabilities. We have hydrogen fuel cell, world-class capability there that gives us optionality in terms of how we power vehicles. And then, downstream, more hands-free, more semi-autonomous to eventually fully autonomous driving capabilities and the ability to connect vehicles That's all a commercial backbone play for us. This is all IP and technology that GM is committed to, and that's the technology toolkit that we have to work from at GM Defense.
You guys won, right, the infantry squad vehicle. You guys developed the initial vehicle in something like 6 days, got it into the competition. This is very, very early on when you guys had the prototype vehicle. You built more of them. You eventually won the contract, and you guys are now delivering. Talk to us about other things in the food chain that you're going to be pursuing. Steve Dumont now, the new chief executive of the business, succeeding Dave Albritton. Talk to us a little bit about where you guys want to go, because over the last 4 years, you guys have had a little bit of fits and starts in terms of, right? I mean, there was the Surus vehicle that was very, very impressive that debuted in 2016, if I recall correctly, at the AUSA show. There's sort of been a sense of you guys sort of hunting around for what the market opportunities you guys are going to pursue. You're obviously looking at JLTV. Where are you guys going to be focusing over the coming years? Because it's very clear by having Mark Royce and so many of Pam Fletcher and so many other senior executives from the company here today that this is something that's sort of sanctioned from the very top.
So let me give you an inside view and then a market back view. That from an inside standpoint, you know, we're a $130 billion organization that's purpose-built for commercial vehicles. That's a global commodity market that's hyper-competitive. And so you mentioned our engineering team. You know, the engineering is the beating heart of General Motors in terms of, you know, how we build things and what we do. But we are a commercial and customer-oriented company. And all the processes within, well, say, GM LLC, the corporate parent, are very much, you know, prescribed processes for winning in a global commercial automotive market.
This is a great example of agility, right? Yeah. A factory in 90 days that is delivering to quality, to spec. We've heard that from the DCMA customer as well as the Army customer saying how satisfied they are about how and the process and you know, working with the team. What's the broader message you guys are delivering here, right? Because you guys don't do this just for an ISV contract, right? I mean, that's the start for where you want to go.
Right.
But is it a culture change that is actually at the heart of what you guys are trying to do?
So let me talk about a few things that we're seeing in the market that we think are really strong points for GM Defense. One is the electrification play. We see an electric future. General Motors is committed to an all-electric future. We believe that the future battlefield will be electric and increasingly connected and autonomous. That we have the opportunity to build off the infantry squad vehicle and modular chassis you know, architectures to begin to provide alternatives for electric vehicles. If you look at programs like the robotic combat vehicle, you'll be taking soldiers off platforms. You'll have electric robotic vehicles where without the soldier on the platform, they're not armored. They don't need to be survivable. They become more expendable. They become more lightweight. If they're electric and you're using, you know, commercial parts, you start to have a vehicle that looks a lot more like our commercial roadmap. So this shift to, you know, disaggregated assets on the battlefield, unmanned assets on the battlefield, whether it's for logistics, whether it's a surveillance platform or maybe a light combat vehicle, that the underpinning of an electric, you know, chassis that is autonomous and connected with other vehicles is not that far afield from where we're heading with our commercial backbone. I would also mention the optionally manned fighting vehicle. A big part of the effort there is in digital design. You know, the entire Defense Department right now is trying to figure out how to navigate this turn with the digital enterprise. That's a transformation that General Motors itself has gone through. So again, it's not just the what, it's not just the technology, the how we do it with digital design, with advanced manufacturing and additive manufacturing. There's a lot that we bring to the industrial base that goes beyond just the technology itself. It's our engineering process. It's our manufacturing process. It's the digital design process itself. How you manage IP and data rights and data libraries, very, very complex issues that our customers are struggling with. So, again, I reference the partnership model because as we grow into different vehicle categories and different applications, we're going to bring this method of partnership and commercial technology in, and we think that is very much a differentiator for us.
What has been the key to set up an industrial facility in 90 days? It took you 90 days from groundbreaking to actually being able to start running vehicles, and then 30 days after that, you were handing the keys over to the 82nd Airborne Division, right? What are some of the keys to moving with speed that you think you guys can apply to even things that you are developing?
It all starts with leadership and vision. I think if you look at GM today and the leadership and cultural transformation that the company has gone through, it's
under Mary Barra.
Under Mary Barra, right? Our CEO has set forth a very compelling vision that is, you know, it's a rally point for everybody in the company. And a great example of how quickly we're able to move is the response to the COVID crisis early last year. GM moved very quickly, very aggressively to deploy resources to help solve the ventilator, you know, need and the you know, serious situation that the country and the world was facing for, you know, lack of manufacturing capability. That's not obviously a core application that we have at General Motors, but we were able to very quickly bring those resources to bear. In terms of the facility here, I also want to point out, we turned the first vehicle over to the Army 120 days after the contract award. So it took us 120 days to hand the first vehicle over. It took us 90 days to stand up this facility. Both of those are perhaps unprecedented in terms of the response, the industry response to a contract award. So it comes back to this model of how, but how do we do it in 90 days? It was just a priority for the company.
And I should give a shout out, right? Ricardo Defense is doing all the manuals and all the logistical support for the vehicles. And of course, Hendrick Motorsports, one of the world's most formidable racing organizations with 17 championships to their name. And I have to say, it was a real honor meeting Rick Hendrick himself, who's doing the chassis work. I want to take you to the last question, which is sort of changing how the customer thinks. There's this tendency of thinking about military specifications as being the be-all, end-all of specifications. In certain cases, they're required, right? Tanks, armored vehicles, something very heavy. But a lot of them, the commercial spec is actually vastly superior to whatever the military specification is. You're building this to a commercial specification and precision that far outstrips a lot of military specifications. Military vehicles will put on a couple of hundred miles a year, maybe a couple of thousand miles a year. You guys design and build vehicles for tens of thousands of miles a year across their lifetime with infinitely less maintenance than a military vehicle would require, right? I mean, we were talking about that yesterday on the test track, that, you know, people get 150,000, 200,000 miles and they didn't really take care of the vehicle. That's a lot of GM engineering that's going into that to make it brainless for people to just get in and turn a key and get to wherever they need to get to. How are you working with the customer to show the customer that there are better, cheaper, and faster ways of doing things?
First of all, I would say it depends, right? There are plenty of mil standards that are significantly higher than commercial standards, and then there are cases where the other might be true. So I wouldn't want to pretend that, you know, the commercial baseline is necessarily higher than the military. I'd say in most cases, military requirements would outpace commercial requirements. But it is an advantage that we have, that because we have so many miles driven, so many vehicles, on the road, so much customer feedback, that either we have an answer or we have a process to get you an answer pretty quickly. In some cases, we can simply bring something to the table that we do as a matter of course, that perhaps the Army customer hasn't asked for. One example is, you know, rear view cameras is something that are built into all commercial vehicles today, but that's not necessarily, believe it or not, a military requirement depending on the program. Well, if you have a commercial supply chain for that and you build those and integrate those into every single vehicle you build, that's a short putt. If you're not, it could be a surprising, there could be some sticker shock on providing that type of capability. And there's lots of examples like that. So some of it is, there are technologies of convenience or proven technologies that help the mission that we can bring. In other cases, it's the iterative process, frankly, that I think is just as or even more important, which is we really listen to the customer. There was a lot of soldier feedback. I want to point out that the infantry squad vehicle had a major role for soldier feedback in the source decision, right? I mean, it came down to, in part, how did soldiers feel driving the platform? You know, what were their concerns? And we had the opportunity to listen to them and incorporate that feedback back into our final platform. And we addressed every single soldier concern. So I come back to that method of how we engage, because it's easy to look at GM and say you have all this technology. What people might not expect is that this sort of humble partnership model is, I think, as much or more of a key than the technology itself.
This administration is saying that it is going to change how we do business, do greater agility, retire legacy systems. How do people need to think about speed?
So I think there are a few messages related to that. One is General Motors is excited to be part of the, you know, the defense industrial base. We believe that that concept of the industrial base should be broadened to bring in, you know, the full weight and breadth of the American industrial base, and General Motors is a major part of that. So our leadership is committed to this, the GM defense team is committed to this, and we welcome the opportunity to figure out a better, you know, working model so we can continue to participate in other ways. The speed is demonstrated through this program. That's what's so important about this infantry squad vehicle. It's not that it's 1,000 vehicles so much as it is the manner in which we won, the speed at which we turned the first vehicle, and the speed at which we stood up a facility. I would also point out we're working on electric variants and other modular variants of this ultralight vehicle platform. I think we would welcome a discussion around acquisition reform that better leverages the commercial IP that we're prepared to bring and that better leverages the evolutionary model that commercial automotive brings, which is every year you're going to get a better mousetrap, right? And we're constantly innovating and investing in our portfolio. Why should that be any different for soldiers? Why shouldn't soldiers get the benefit of all the incremental technology investments that we're bringing into our commercial fleet? We're prepared to bring those into the infantry squad vehicle or whatever vehicle opportunities we're fortunate enough to win in the future. There's room for improvement, and I say that with the interest of our soldiers, our taxpayers, and GM shareholders in mind.
Jeff, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank
we really appreciate it. Look forward to many more conversations going into the future.
Thank you.
And joining us now are Fred Maxick, a former NASA scientist who is the co-founder and chief technology officer of a small Florida company, Healthy, that early in the COVID pandemic developed the first ever human-safe ultraviolet system to disinfect folks as they pass through doorways and other areas. And Dr. Wes Naylor, a retired United States Navy captain, who's now the CEO of 50 Pound Brain Ventures. Fred, great to have you on the program. And Wes, welcome back. It's been too long.
Thanks, Vago.
Thank you.
Fred, let's start off with you, right? I mean, folks know about the disinfecting properties of ultraviolet radiation. Consumers have been able to buy units that will disinfect surfaces, whether sheets at hotels or toothbrushes and the like. But the big challenge has been figuring out, right, how do you disinfect people? Because fundamentally in this pandemic, we've found that there isn't enough hand gel and bleach to go around, and it's labor intensive. Whereas if you can get people actually moving and dealing with the aerosolized problem is the big thing. What's so special about what you guys do that nobody else in the world is doing?
So the major difference we have today is light, as we've used it in the form of UV, has always been 254 nanometers. That is standard UVC light that comes out of a mercury vapor tube. We've used it for decades in hospitals and restaurants and some of these wands you just pointed out. How effective they are is a mixed bag, and I think that's a separate conversation. What we have today is a new form of UV light. It's called far UVC, and this is 222 nanometers. 222 nanometers has some very, very unique properties. One is it's devastating to pathogens. It can destroy viruses. It can destroy bacteria by making them and rendering them inactive. The other property that's unique to it doesn't penetrate the human skin. It doesn't penetrate the human eye duct and the tear layer. It is basically been found to be a safe form of light by multiple independent university studies, independent peer-reviewed journals around the world now for this past decade. And what we have uniquely is we have product that contains this light source that we manufacture for uses across many, many areas within our environment.
And so where are you guys in the commercialization, right? Where are you in your development stage at this point? Any customers yet?
Yeah, many customers. We first of all, we were not new to this field because of COVID. We've been active in this field and developing products in this field for about 7 years now. I did some of my work with NASA 13 years ago on looking at how we utilize UV light to clean our environment. So this was not new to us. We've been in this space for a while, and we're in some of our products already on our third generation of products. So we have numerous commercial products out there. We've been out there for quite some time, and we have installations across the country.
Fred, how quickly does this work, right? Because, I mean, one of the challenges with this kind of technology is, well, you got to keep the wand on it for an X period of time. How fast are we talking about?
So with something like the wand, and depending on the pathogen can be inactivated in as little as a third of a second. So we're dealing with very high fluence levels, not like the sort of consumer wands you see on the market today.
From a NASA perspective, you constantly have to disinfect people as well as make sure that you're not putting contaminants on spacecraft, right? I mean, it would suck to go all the way to Mars and then find out that, you know, you've got contamination on it and you think, wow, we found life. It just turns out it's Bob's chicken sandwich. Wes, talk to us a little bit, right? It's not good enough to have a really good idea, right? Getting it into the military ecosystem is a challenge. You're a former aviator, but also an acquisition professional. You were working with Naval X team and others in the Navy and up at the Pentagon. Talk to us a little bit about the challenge of taking what is a really, really good idea, getting it through the valley of death and to the attention of folks in DOD, right? You may have a product that solves their problem. The system makes it a little bit hard to get that product in front of the customer.
Well, Vaga, I think you're hitting exactly. Certainly, the acquisition leadership in DOD and the associated rapid acquisition organizations that have sprung up over the past 4 to 5 years are open to working with non-traditional defense firms and non-traditional firms like Healthy to take what is cutting-edge dual-use technology and bring it into the military domain. Now, I first started working with Healthy when we were seeing problems with Navy ships having to pull into port. And the question was, how could we use technology to allow for continued operational effectiveness? And there were three things that we had to attack. At first, when COVID was coming out, we thought the surface, it was all being spread on the surface. So we somehow had to be able to protect the surface vector. Secondly, we knew it was being spread through the air. At the beginning, we thought that was only about 30% of it. Now we know it's the vast majority. So how do we protect the air vector? And then third, you've got people and things coming on and off a ship. So they could potentially be bringing it. So how do you protect that vector? And what it comes down to, much like we learned after about defending a structure after 9/11, there's not one silver bullet for this. It's a risk management equation. But can you bring a series of technologies that have not been used before in a fast manner that allows for increased operational effectiveness? That's the win for DOD. That's the win for the soldiers, sailors, airmen, and Marines. And they have some very specific needs that parallel those of the commercial sector. One of our partnerships with Boeing, we developed the state-of-the-art ability to clean electronic intensive environments like an aircraft cockpit quickly and effectively. That's great for allowing airlines to get back in the game and turnaround times, but think about the same thing. Think about all the electronic intensive environments, whether it's the bridge of a ship, whether it's combat information center, whether it's the cockpit of an F-35, that how many sets of hands are going through there? And you don't want to use liquid chemicals to clean right. That, you could just use light. It's a great solution, but you have the standard challenge of getting the acquisition system to deal with a technology it hasn't seen before.
And so what's the next step in development, Fred, right? I mean, where do you guys wanna go? Where do you wanna be in say 5 years time?
We continue to move forward with our work, both on the research side and as well as the product development side. And the idea would be to take this eczema lamp we have today and have its form factor mutate to fit the different applications that people find desirous. We certainly think the mobile application is one that is definitely worth pursuing, particularly as you have congregations of folks on buses, on planes, and that's an area that's of keen interest. But we also think bring this down into areas where people are gathering into offices, into conferences, will bring some very, very quick resilience and some additional security to those spaces. We don't want to see our country, our infrastructure shut down again because of a pathogen. This may have been a practice run. And if it's a practice run, we need to learn from it and be vigilant to make sure that we can create hardened systems that will allow us to still be able to utilize them in the event of another pathogen like this. I would say, to me, it's really a matter of how much we can get this out into a ubiquitous environment. So this just becomes another element of light that is available when needed.
And talk to folks about the form factor, right? How big are you now? What are the models and shapes, right? And to do what it is you want to do, for example, whether it's entry on an airplane or anything else, where are you now? Where do you need to be as successful as you want to be?
So today we can do everything from a 2-inch little tile all the way up to about a 2-foot tube. We believe that will expand up to sort of a 4-foot tube, which gets to a lot of standard lighting. But we'd also like to understand how we can shape things better. We understand the material science around this is very different than light we've used before. It's absorbed by most of the materials that we would normally use as reflectors. So we have to deal with different types of beam shaping. But I think in general, if you see a form factor that light can cover and you want coverage of the air and the surfaces, we want to be able to do that. Everything from a high bay in a hangar to a downlight in an office space.
And so what you're talking about is effectively a new light fixture that has both the disinfecting bulb as well as the light source itself.
Yes, so many of our fixtures try to accomplish both of those functions, mainly because we already have the point of power connection and connectivity already in place, and that makes the retrofit the simplest method.
What do you estimate to be the size of this market that you're pursuing? This is a vast market, isn't it?
It is a vast market, and I always liken it to the difference between the lighting market today, which is a multi $100 billion market, but comparing it to some of the health and wellness markets, which are exponentially bigger than that. Somewhere between those two is the potential size of the market we might be willing to address here.
That's right. So even a small percentage actually means quite a lot for you guys, and that doesn't, right, in the worst case, in the best case, you become one of the big players in what is a vast market, which is in what I know what you want to do, Fred. Wes, bring us home. We've got a new team at the Pentagon. It looks like they want to drive change. Innovation is on everybody's lips. The acquisition and sustainment secretary, if the Senate agrees, will be Mike Brown, who is the Defense Innovation Unit head. Heidi Shu will be the, if the Senate approves, engineer research and engineering. And then former Pentagon acquisition chief Frank Kendall would become the Secretary of the Air Force, and Carlos Del Toro would become Navy Secretary. Everybody here has got enormous amounts of Army acquisition experience in their careers. What's the message you want to deliver to them about the need for speed and to bring innovative players into the space? I understand that you're advising and you're working with Healthy, right? So it's not you're not a disinterested party in this, but you are somebody who's always tried to push innovation throughout your career. What's the message you want to deliver to the senior leadership team?
Well, Vago, whether it's a product or it's the process, when it is aligned with DoD interests, truly speed is life. And, if we can get things to the warfighter that protect them, it's truly a speed is life equation. Now, if I were going to look, knowing all of the great leaders we have coming in and their focus not only on innovation and acquisition techniques, but a focus on dual use technologies, pulling what has a commercial appeal into the DoD market at a high technology readiness level, I frankly could not come up with a better product to do a proof of concept off than Healthy and Far UV. There is a very definite need for the technology. We have to be able to operate with a pathogen endangered environment. That's just a given. I mean, it's bad enough what has happened during COVID. Imagine if we were engaged in a kinetic battle with a peer or near peer. We couldn't just send everybody home from the Pentagon. We have to be able to work in these environments. We couldn't just pull ships into port because a pathogen broke out on it. We have to be able to fight those ships. So if we can take that stated desire to pull technology from the commercial sector that's already mature and has uses in the DoD and commercial sector, and then we can use accelerated acquisition technologies on top of it, you know, that's really a win-win-win scenario for the government, for industry, for the taxpayer, and certainly for the soldier, sailors, airmen, and Marines at the point of the spear.
Fred, let me ask you one wrap-up question, right? I mean, you work for NASA, which is a formidable acquisition organization in its own right, even though you were on the science side of things. What are some of the lessons learned for you as you've gone through this process?
I think the lessons learned from NASA were pretty straightforward. There was a mission that needed to be accomplished. Speed was of great urgency, but so was accuracy. And to me, this is about transparency of science. We celebrated our failures. We celebrate our successes. As long as we let the science guide us and help us towards making the right decisions, that was a culture there. We've gotten away from that a bit now. We need to get back to let's use the best science to solve our problems. And if we do that, I think we'll be in a good place in the future.
Fred, best of luck with the venture. Absolutely fascinating. Wish you all success in the world. Wes, absolutely great having you back on again, sir. Real pleasure. And look forward to following your guys' progress over the coming months and years. Thanks so very much. Fair winds following seas.
Thanks, Vago. Great talking to you.
Thank you.